This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Welcome to all of you who are joining us. Today I have a very special guest who also happens to be a perfect, Kim. a personal friend of mine was what I wanted to say. She's perfect too. But she is a sweetie, and I've gotten to know Kim through the years, first as a fellow publisher, and I got to see, you know, what Kim was doing and look at her writing curriculum, and then later I got to know Kim better, and she's a dear friend of mine. And just really have to say that Kim has a heart for homeschool moms, and especially those with children who struggle a little. And Kim, you're going to share a little bit about your story today. But first of all, welcome.
Thank you. I'm always excited to be with you.
Oh, thank you. Well, Kim, you own a company, a Write Shop, and that's WriteShop.com. And we encourage everyone to go and check out your website as well as your Facebook group, also the same name, Write Shop, on Facebook. And you have a homeschool story you're going to share with us. But first, tell us a little bit about your homeschool journey.
Well, my husband and I, we just celebrated our 38th anniversary, so we are definitely on the veteran side of things. We have a son. He and his wife live in England. He married a wonderful British girl, and so they live overseas. Both of our daughters are stay-at-home moms, and they blessed us with 7 grandchildren. They range in age from 13 all the way down to 20 months. We began homeschooling back in 1988, so it was kind of on the cusp of being a pioneer and being a modern homeschool mom. I was just right on the edge of the pioneer, so some people still consider me one, but really I didn't have it as hard as some of my predecessors who had to really fight the government kind of stuff that was going on back in the early 80s. But at the time, our girls were going into 2nd grade and 5th grade. And they were, I guess you might call them traditional learners. They could work fairly independently, and most subjects, including reading and writing, came pretty easily to them. So teaching them was really pretty much of a breeze. But with our youngest son, it wasn't quite that easy for me. And In many ways, I'm glad that the girls came first, because I was able to go, okay, it's not me. There's something about teaching this boy that I need to learn, but I know that it's not me as a teacher because my girls are doing okay. So, but he struggled at every turn. I mean, he couldn't sit still, so he was already, you know, your typical fidgety, active child. But then just the general skills like reading and writing developed at a painfully slow rate. And really, Felice, I was so thankful that I was homeschooling him, because I'm sure he would have fallen through the cracks in the public system. He just needed time and maturity, and the Lord, I believe, gave me tips and ideas and helps and ways that I could teach him that were not traditional, because he didn't thrive in that traditional environment. So anyway, as a family, we did a lot of unit studies, which met the girls' academic needs, but it provided plenty of kinesthetic and verbal outlets to meet Ben's learning style. So over time, with a lot of prayer and patience and trial and error, he did blossom and even surprised us that he became strongly academic in later high school. He actually, even though my girls were always smart and you know, well-read and all that, he became an academic in the truest sense. He's working on his PhD dissertation. He just started seminary in September.
Wow.
And
amazing,
it's truly the hand of God, because he was the most reluctant. He's the poster child for reluctant writers. Mm-hmm. And the heart of my story.
Wow. And he, and you know, I really do attribute, and I know you don't like taking all the credit, but you know, if he hadn't been homeschooled and you hadn't identified that, Kim, it could have been so much different. So what a amazing praise report.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So we're going to discuss today some of the things you did from this firsthand experience, as well as some great tips for moms with kids who may be struggling in that same area. So, you know, first let's start. It's always good to have a definition, and let's do that with, you know, what is a reluctant writer? You know, is it, how do you know? I know a lot of times people will say, well, you know, my kid's just lazy. And they really use the word lazy for an all-encompassing, you know, I think where you know, there has to be a differentiation between a discipline problem and whether or not they are, you know, having issues. So let's discuss that.
Okay, that's a really good question, because laziness, I would say more times than not, laziness boils down to being a character issue. So just what you were saying, it's mm-hmm. And it can be all-encompassing. But with writing, I would say most children don't naturally hate writing, or they aren't born to hate writing. But as if they're not nurtured in writing, then over time they begin to believe that they hate it just because they're either unmotivated or unequipped, or they just, it's become a drudgery for them because they've never really learned how to enjoy it. So when they mm-hmm. tackle a writing project, and it really doesn't have to be anything, even anything big, they can't think of what to write about, or their writing is really bland and boring, or they're just disorganized. And when you think about it, and this, I guess, is one of the challenges of teaching a kid to write, is it's hard for them to capture a fleeting thought and pin it to the paper. You know, we think it sounds easy to tell our kids, just write what's in your head. But a lot of kids just aren't mature enough to put all the pieces together. And it's a big deal
right.
for that thought to form in their head and travel all the way down the arm to the pencil. And by the time he starts wondering, how do I spell this word, or how do I punctuate that, or do I put a comma here? His wonderful idea has been reduced to three dull words on the paper. So it's like he had this great thought, and it comes down to my dog sat down. And they just, or sometimes even worse, the whole thought vanishes completely. So we, I think, as parents, underestimate how much help our kids need with writing. We think, shouldn't they be able to think of an idea on their own and then just write it? Well, maybe in a perfect world, but really, kids have trouble coming up with topics. So that's one way that they're reluctant. They forget what they want to say, or perfectionism overwhelms them, or they're afraid of making mistakes, and then that can paralyze them, or their hand hurts. I mean, these things, they're all they all play into it, either independently or muddled up together. And so here are, I think, five things that maybe would sum up what are the highlights of a reluctant writer. It won't touch everything, but it mm-hmm. encompasses, I think, most of it. And one is that kids have a lack of confidence. They just don't know what's expected of them, and so they freeze. And the blank paper becomes a scary, overwhelming thing because they just feel insecure about writing.
Let's talk about each of these, Kim. Okay, so lack of confidence. Would you say that is specifically in the area of writing, or would you consider that more of like a general overall?
Well, that would be, in this case, it would be writing directed, writing oriented. It would be, so let's say that you tell a child, write about whatever you want. You have just, for most kids, given them the death knell because they have no boundaries, they have no direction, and so their confidence just droops because they don't know even, it would be, imagine taking a child out into the middle of the ocean, dropping him, you know, from a helicopter into the ocean and telling him, swim for shore. So he doesn't know which direction shore is, and there's a huge ocean of water between him and any piece of land. And even if it's not that far away, he can't see it. He feels rattled and uncertain because he doesn't have any sense of direction. And so that does stir up that lack of confidence.
Mm-hmm. That's a great visual. That's great. So I can definitely see that. So, okay. So what's your second point?
The second point would be that they don't have the skills and tools to feel proficient. So by that I mean they don't maybe have a good handle on vocabulary, mm-hmm. and so their writing is dull because they don't know how to use a thesaurus, or they don't have access to word banks, or their spoken vocabulary is good, but they have spelling fears, and so they don't write the best word, they write the shortest word. And that's what I used to get from my son. Even if we talked about good words, and we'd sit down and I'd say, okay, we've got all these great words you could use. Which one do you want? Which is the shortest to spell?
Right.
So, yeah. So that's one
that happened in our house, too. Yeah, that definitely happened in our house.
They can also lack tools like sentence variations and just things that make their writing sound more mature and more interesting. They don't maybe know how to structure, how to organize. They don't have good guidelines for planning. So those are all things that kids need to learn. And I can jump into some of those things now, or I can come back to them later. You know, if you just want to hear the kind of the list of problems first, and then we can address the corrections in a few minutes, or I don't know how you want to approach that.
Yeah, let's just, I'd like to, just go through the different points. And yeah.
Okay, the third thing that in my experience as having taught hundreds of homeschool students writing and having dealt with many, many parents and just over the years, the kids fear being criticized by their parents. And it's not like that with math. It's not like that with a multiple choice history test. But there's something about writing that is deeply personal. And so what a child begins to think in his mind is, if you criticize my writing, you're criticizing me. So there are ways that parents can teach self-editing and do parent editing without squishing their kids. And so that is definitely something I want to address later on. And so then the fourth area of reluctance is physical limitations. This is a very real problem that kids have, and it can interfere with their ability to write. So whether your child holds his pencil in a death grip, or like with Ben, he would not only hold it in a death grip, but he actually had problems where if the pencil would cross his midline, so he's right-handed, so if he were writing on a little bit to the left of his center midline, he would start to have problems with his writing.
Wow.
His shoulders would tense up. And I would have to sometimes massage his shoulders while he would write. it's just very challenging. And so the physical act of writing can interfere with the joy of expressing thoughts and ideas, because they may be very mentally creative. But if there is a stumbling block of getting that those words out onto paper, that can rob them of the joy of writing and start to build reluctance.
How are you intuitive enough to see that, though, Kim? I mean, I think sometimes, you know, we're so busy as parents, or we give them an assignment, and I tend to walk away because, you know, you've got them working on something, and then, you know, you think, well, I have a little bit of a break here. And so
I'm going to go off and do some lesson planning. I'm going to go throw a load of laundry in. I'm going to go start dinner in the crock pot. Yeah. Well, actually, this one is one of the easiest to identify, because your kids will tell you, my hand hurts. And it really does. So you think they're just making an excuse. But really, especially children who are in early elementary, say up to age 9 or even 10, this can be a very legitimate problem. Some of it is just not knowing how to hold the pencil correctly. Some of these things can be taken care of with special ergonomic tools that you can get, pencil grips, special pens and pencils and things like that. Some of it will be, it will manifest itself in other ways where you'll just know, okay, there's something, there's some challenges here. His writing is, he's 8, but he's writing that looks like a 4 or 5 year old. The size of the letters and words is not consistent. The shape of the letters is inconsistent. There may be backwards writing. There may be illegible writing. Those are all signs that there could be some learning challenges, like dysgraphia or dyslexia. The child just, you know, may have some learning issues. With Ben, he was diagnosed with something they called kinesthetic deficit disorder. I have not been able to find that on the internet. Now, we're talking, 25 years ago, between 20 and 25 years ago when he was diagnosed. But from the symptoms, I'm thinking it was more of a sensory processing disorder. He was not aware of his extremities. He would drop his pencil. He had to have something in his hand to keep him from crawling. His fingers would just crawl away and grab whatever was nearby. So if we were working at the breakfast table and there was still a spoon and a bowl there, his hand would find it and start banging the spoon. So giving him something squishy to hold in his hand really helped. But as a parent, I could see it. And I know you have a child who had special needs. You certainly saw some of those things.
Right.
So the kids that you leave to their own devices are usually the ones who have already demonstrated some independent working abilities. I started to notice these things in Ben before I would ever have left him to work independently. So I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, it does. And, I know now there's a lot out there that deal with sensory. One of my friends has made a study of that, with her daughter. And she has a lot of specific things that you can do. And I think we had a couple of those recordings in our special needs expo. But, so it was real with your son, and that's something we can look at with our kids. Danny recently showed me a callus on her finger, and I was teasing her and saying, oh, that's because of texting, which I was teasing because it was in a totally different place, but it really is where her pencil rests. And so as you're talking now, I'm thinking, I wonder if she's gripping it too tightly, Kim, to make a callus. I've never looked at it. She doesn't normally complain that her hand hurts, but she does have a callus. And this year, my kids switched from mechanical pencils, which were all the rage for a couple of years, to wood pencils. And we've had many electric pencil sharpeners. And I was at the office supply with my husband, and he picked up the crank one. And I'm like, seriously? Because ours broke. And he said, you guys will love this. Don't you remember when you were in school?
Oh, they will. Yeah.
It works brilliantly. The problem is they take it around the house.
I need to save a block of wood. Yeah, so when Anne's going to take the SAT, she goes, can I take my pencil sharpener? Can you see her with this crank thing? Oh my gosh. I said, no, you're going to just have to take some pencils and then bring up some backup, you know, mechanical pencils with number two. But I'm wondering now, too, if it's a combination of the wood pencil, you know, that she's
been gripping.
You know,
it might be. And just, I know that I do much more of my writing on the computer than I ever used to when I was younger.
Right.
And I believe I had a little callus on my finger when I did a lot more pencil writing. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. She's older and she does well, and I wouldn't be too worried about her at this point.
But I think I will ask her. Yeah. Okay, good.
Okay, so the last reluctant writer main problem is self-criticism and perfectionism, and this is such a big one because the child just builds up in his mind that he will never strive to meet even his own expectations, and he sets up such high standards for himself that he'll never achieve them, and so he doesn't bother at all, or he doesn't give his best. So anyway, those are the five. I mean, there are more factors, certainly, and we could spend all day just talking about the different ways that kids exhibit reluctance, but I know that moms are also eager to hear about some solutions, and so we can jump in at any point.
Yeah. Just a couple of things here, too. Christy's sharing in our chat room that her son is 11, and his writing isn't legible most of the time, which is more of a mechanics issue than a reluctant writer issue. So, you know, I guess she has difficulty in, you know, probably reading his papers because it's hard to read. So there's a whole lot out there as far as, you know, whether or not to, which is not the subject of this webinar, but I'll just mention it, you know, whether or not to teach your child to print or just go into some sort of cursive writing.
Or to go straight into computer typing.
Right.
And typing is not typing 100% of the time is not recommended because children need to have the skills of writing by hand when they're faced with timed writing like the SAT and so forth. They need to have those skills of writing by hand. But when a child has severe writing problems and it manifests itself in total illegibility, then it may be time for Christy to have her son's writing evaluated, and that would be a possibility for her.
Okay. One of the questions here quickly, could you just do a quick review of your five? They wanted to share those again. Order. Okay.
So lack of confidence and not having good boundaries or understanding what the purpose or direction of the writing should be. The second would be a general lack of writing skills and tools. The third would be fear of parental criticism. The fourth, physical limitations, like the hand cramping and so forth. And the fifth would be perfectionism.
Okay. All right. We are going to take a really short break, Kim, and we will be back on the other side in order to answer some questions and also to have you share a little bit more with all of us.
Great.
At the heart of learning is the ability to write. WriteShop understands the challenges of teaching writing. We offer parent-approved, award-winning writing resources for kindergarten through high school. Our writing programs are engaging with step-by-step lessons that give your student the necessary building blocks of the writing process. WriteShop not only teaches your child how to write, it shows you how to teach. WriteShop offers many options to guide your student through the writing process and inspire even the most reluctant writers. Parents rave about the results. Whether you're a new or veteran homeschooler, we encourage you to visit WriteShop.com to see how we can help you along your homeschooling journey. With WriteShop, teaching writing has never been easier.
Hi, Hi, and welcome back to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. My name is Felice Gerwitz, your host, and today with me on the line is Kim Kautzer of WriteShop.com. And Kim has some amazing writing programs you want to check out. And Kim, we were just discussing 5 points that you mentioned that just highlight for us some maybe skill set levels or issues that children might have in order for us to be able to identify them, not necessarily use them as excuses, but to say, okay, this is a big help for me and my child. So I appreciate you sharing those with us. But now we need some solutions. So we've identified some things, and if I was laughing at number five, going, I don't really have too many perfectionists. My husband is my oldest that has, probably out of any of my children, the most learning difficulty. Like Kim, when he was little, he would erase a letter that he thought didn't look like it should until he had a hole in the paper. You know,
yes.
It was just it. So he's definitely a perfectionist. We'd go to the grocery store, and I'm throwing things in the cart, and he's telling me to wait, and he's fixing everything up. I mean, so I finally just let him push the cart, and I would just, throw things in and let him arrange it because it was, I'm definitely not. So for him, that was a real issue with his writing, and so that was something I wish I had known that also ties in to the reluctance, that part of it. I never put those two together. So, but you're going to give us some ideas now about what we can do to encourage our kids.
Yes. So you talk about the perfectionist. So let's start there.
Okay.
First, I want to encourage moms who are listening that there's nothing wrong with having your children strive for excellence. We hear that in Scripture. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. So we're encouraged to strive to be the best we can be. But perfectionism is this internal pressure to get it right the first time. Really, for many kids, it is the mother of all stumbling blocks, and it's the number one contributor to writer's block. It is a good thing when kids want to do their best, but when they put unrealistic expectations on themselves, when they expect themselves to be perfect, that's when it becomes paralyzing. So I ask this at conferences all the time. How many times do your kids want to write a paper? Once. And then what do they want to do? They want you to rave over it. They want you to make photocopies and send it to grandma. They want you to put it on the refrigerator. What they don't want you to do is make any negative comments about it. There is no room in their world for the nuisance of proofreading or editing or revising or getting parent feedback. No, in their little minds, the first draft has to be perfect. And I already know what I meant to say, so that's what I said. They just cannot relinquish ownership of that paper to, have the parents do any kind of editing or evaluating. The irony in all of this is that they believe that whatever they put on paper will never be good enough. So they struggle with this walking on the edge of the knife. They either think it's never good enough and they don't write at all, or they think it's fine the way it is and they don't want any feedback. So that's the problem with perfectionism. So what can a mom do to help this child? One thing, moms, you can is just know in your own heart and share with your children again and again that creativity is messy. When they paint, they somehow understand that it's okay to be messy. When you work with clay, when you do any kind of craft or hobby, it leaves debris around. When you work with wood, there's sawdust everywhere. You sweep it up. You clean it up. Creativity is messy. So a rough draft is a way to let those messy ideas kind of make their way to the paper. So with reluctant perfectionists, teaching them that it's okay to write a rough draft and be okay with what came out on paper because writing can be fixed. And it's usually easier to fix once it's out of your head and on the paper. It's a lot harder to fix writing when it's all jumbled up in your head. So as I know this sounds kind of like a pat answer, but really just get it finished, child. I mean, I personally could spend my entire life tweaking everything I write. I'm a perfectionist, and you know that about me. And plus, as a writing teacher or, you know, a developer of writing curricula, I feel like I'm always under the magnifying glass. And so I feel self-conscious about my writing if it's not just so. But even I have learned that there's a place where I have to stop and say enough is enough and it's good enough. And so teaching our children to reach that point. And there are other things that I'll share that may help that process, but just in general, that if kids can understand that writing is a creative process and creativity is not always tidy and that their writing can be fixed, then they are more willing to approach that blank page.
Very good. I think that really helps. Okay, so let's continue on. So how do you instill confidence if they have a lack of confidence, which kind of goes in with, you know, some of what you shared with the perfectionism?
Oh, absolutely. And there are some things that I have learned. And this first one that I'm going to teach you is, it seems small, but it is one of the biggest success prompters that you can offer to a reluctant child, and that is, moms, do not be afraid to act as your child's scribe. This takes the pressure off of your child. Now, she is free to what? She can dream up her ideas. She can spout them off without any fear of having to write them down. So whether she's afraid of making spelling mistakes, or whether she's got that death grip on her pencil, if she can avoid those little pitfalls, because after all, what is writing? Writing is getting ideas out of our head and putting them on paper. Mm-hmm. If the child dictates to you, it's still her words. You're just helping her by acting as her scribe. And so you would still attribute the content to her, even if you did the actual physical transcribing. So, as you brainstorm together with your child about ideas, make a list, make a mind map, use a graphic organizer of some kind. In Write Shop, we provide for all, at every age, their age-appropriate grade-level graphic organizers and brainstorming tools that the kids can use in order to organize their writing. It's okay if you do the writing, you make the lists, so they can just sit there and think of ideas and spit them out. And this was Ben's salvation. When he was little and couldn't write on his own, but he had the ideas in his head, he could dictate them to me and I would write them down, and I would put his name and his age and the date, because sometimes I would read it back to myself later on and think, if I didn't know better, I would not believe that this was these were the words of a 7-year-old. Because his oral vocabulary was so much higher than what he could put down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So now what you can do to take it a step further is once the ideas are on paper, then your child may be willing to write the draft on her own, if she's confident that her thoughts won't vanish. If she can see the brainstorming work, she can see all the words there, she may have the confidence to write on her own. But if she's feeling insecure, she may still need your help to weed out some of the details, organize what's left, and maybe even write the first draft for her. But then you can have her copy it in her own hand from your writing. So there are lots of different ways that you can go about doing this. You don't have to do every single word. As they gain confidence and skill, maybe you can write the words that trip them up, and they can write all the words that they feel comfortable writing. You can hold the thoughts in their head for them while they write so that you can just spout it back. So if they tell you a sentence and then they forgot what they said, you will remember it for them, or you can have written it down and then you dictate it back to them as they write.
That's
so there
a good
are just
idea.
Lots of yeah. ways to work this through where you don't have to do every single word, but you can wean them. You know, you start from writing some words, then eventually you can maybe write every other sentence. They write a sentence, you write a sentence, until they're comfortable writing on their own. Now, with Ben, he was well into late elementary before he was writing on his own, and even then I was still letting him dictate to me his first drafts in seventh grade. So,
and that's
yeah.
okay,
and,
Kim.
And
you
obviously,
know, because
it didn't.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it didn't support him. Look at him now. He's
right.
writing a PhD.
Right.
So,
and
anyway, so
and
that's
so great. Yeah, I mean, you encouraged him, and that's the important thing, and that's what we want, you know, to for the moms listening to get out of this show that, you know, here's Kim, who owns a writing curriculum company, who is sharing with you some personal information to encourage you. And so, you know, you didn't let, you know, a quote-unquote handicap, if you will, influence, you know, his abilities. And I think that's so wonderful, Kim, and it's really an inspiration for all of us listening. So,
and I also wanted to take a little segue here to remind parents that if you lack wisdom, what does the Bible tell us to do? Pray and ask for wisdom. Because if you're teaching your child and you lack wisdom, God will give what you need to equip your child. And so I believe that that's what happened in Ben's case. I believe that God provided me the wisdom I needed. I didn't, you know, make a big mental deal of this. It just was suddenly the idea that came to me that I thought, well, this is what I need to do. And I believe that that's what the Holy Spirit does, is he teaches us and he equips us. So ask, and the wisdom will be given to you to know what best to do with your child.
That's very good. And, you know, we made little books. I remember we went to the Keys one time for vacation, and the kids caught fish. And down in the Keys, some of the restaurants specialize in you bringing your fish in, and they cook it for you. To me, that's like the best of both worlds. And, you know, the fish were very, very small, but they were within, you know, what they were, red snapper, but within the exact size that they needed to be. And Nick was just delighted, and he was one that didn't really enjoy writing, but he dictated to me when we got home, because we had all these pictures, you know, exactly what happened, how he caught his fish, and then the very end of the book, like the back cover of it, is a huge platter of fried fish with him standing there with a big grin on his face, you know. And it was, you know, it was just wonderful. I mean, that book still floats around the house. You know, we find it on occasion, and I think we lost it in the computer somewhere, you know, and all the subsequent changes and whatever. But I just love that we have that. And, you know, he's even able to see that, you know, while, you know, he struggled, he had this masterpiece, if you will. You know, we typed it up on really great paper and front and back, and the grandkids read it now and that kind of thing. But, you know, you just don't know what impact, and what an encouragement to him, you know, to be able to have that and, you know, write his own
book. You make a really good point, because one of the things, and I don't even have that in my, that wasn't one of the things I was going to mention, but I'll just, because you did, that kids need an audience. And sometimes your kids are reluctant because they don't know what the point of the lesson is. Why am I bothering if it's just mom's going to read it and throw it in my folder? And so if you provide your kids with an audience and you give them some really fun and creative ways that they can publish, whether they make little books or whether you frame something on construction paper and have a wall where you post artwork and stories, whether you have a creative way of publishing a story to make it more fun for the kids. Lots of different ideas, and turn it into a mobile, whatever. then they feel more inspired to do their best because they know that it's going to be on display. So anyway, that little comment on that.
Jackie also commented in the chat room. Let me add this really quick. She said she has her kids talking to a recorder, and she transcribes for them. And then she has them go through and edit what they've written. So I think I'm reading that right. So
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, because what she's saying that she cuts their sentences up. You know,
right.
She types by
right.
sentence and cuts
there
them up, and then they can rearrange and edit. And I think that's a really great idea. Hi, Jackie, by the
Wonderful.
Way.
Wonderful. yeah.
And then, okay, so you were asking about some other things we can do to build confidence.
Right.
And another is to define boundaries. Remember I talked about throwing kids into the ocean and telling them to swim for shore?
Yes.
Well, if you give them clear expectations and instructions, then you're telling a child just what he's supposed to do, and he won't feel like he's floundering out in the middle of the sea. And so you don't give him that whatever you write about activity. You build confidence by suggesting ideas to write about. Letting kids write from observation or personal experience is going to be more confidence building than having them invent something in their heads. Writing stories from their heads, writing fiction or inventing stories, is a really great activity, but you have to have good guidelines to walk your child through the process. And that's one of the things that we do in our elementary-aged materials when we're teaching kids how to write fiction. We're giving them many, many tools to do that. But if you're not using a writing program and you're just teaching your kids writing just from your own skills and through your unit studies or whatever, make sure that that they're writing from either observation where they can see something and describe it or experience it, touch it, taste it, smell it, or where they're writing from personal experience, something that they have been through and can write about. Or, of course, there's report writing, but that's a whole different set of skills. But rather than just having them invent things from their heads, which can be frustrating for children who don't have confidence. Another thing is to have them choose topics that tickle their fancy. You know, are they horse fanatics? Are they into sports? Are they into a particular kind of craft or activity that you may not like? Right now, Minecraft is all the rage. You may not be a Minecraft fan. You may be bored to tears reading about their Minecraft escapades. But if they are excited about writing, if they can write about something Minecraft-related, then let them, because that will – they won't always write about Minecraft. It's just a tool to get them writing now and to build confidence and enthusiasm for later when they have to write about things that won't necessarily be their first choice.
Very good.
Let me jump in with a
question right here, and this is one that came in earlier today. It said, my writer is very disjointed. How do you get them to organize their thoughts? Do you have curriculum that addresses this?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's when graphic organizers come into play, because they will help a child think through, okay, for instance, we have a graphic organizer in our Write Shop Junior books that's a 9-grid. So you could even make one of these on your own. Just make, you know, 3 lines down, 3 lines across, like a tic-tac-toe. And so the first row would be the beginning of the story. So each of those spaces, each square in the first row represents a step in the story. So the very first box is maybe the story problem or how the story is going to begin. And then down at the very bottom row, the very last box, will be how the story ends. So then the middle row is 3 things that happen in the middle, and the last row is 3 things that happen to build up toward the end of the story. So you're just writing little notes. This is not a place for complete sentences. This is just a place to drop, to put down ideas, kind of like storyboarding, where you're just plotting out where a story is going to go from start to finish. That's just one of many kinds of brainstorming tools that you can use to help kids not only come up with ideas, but to organize them so that their writing isn't disjointed. And then if they use their graphic organizer when they're writing, they'll stay on track and won't take rabbit trails and lose their train of thought, which kids are prone to do. If they just want to just jump in and start writing, they don't want to be bothered with brainstorming. That's when their writing gets out of hand because they don't have any direction. They don't have anything to follow, and they just write as the muse strikes, and then they end up rambling and rattling around.
Okay. Do you have a graphic organizer that you sell or that just goes with the junior? Is that the...
We don't sell just graphic organizers, but they're part of the curriculum. Yeah.
Okay,
so every lesson in Write Shop Primary, which is the K through third grade level, will have some kind of a way that you can help your child organize the writing. As they get into Write Shop Junior, then they actually have printed worksheets that will, for each lesson. So there are 10 lessons in each book, and each lesson is a 3-week effort. And brainstorming is one day in the 3-week process when they are organizing their thoughts in one of many different kinds of graphic organizers.
Okay, I don't have
it. And then in our older.
Your older set, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, in our older junior high school level, Write Shop Junior is the upper elementary. That's the third through fifth grade. And then Write Shop 1 and 2 is sixth through high school. And that also has graphic organizers of different kinds. So that's an important part of the writing process.
Good. I don't think that the person with the question is in the chat room right now, but they posted that. And then here was another one that I'm going to go ahead and ask you this because we're already coming up close to the end of our time. So it says, my child is 8 and doesn't like to write. Where would I begin with your curriculum?
With an 8-year-old, you can begin in Write Shop Primary Book C, or you can begin in Write Shop Junior Book D. If the child is on the younger level, pretty immature, and hates writing, I would start with Book C. If the child is just kind of resistant, has good ideas, but is not great about writing them down and needs help with organization, then I might start with Book D. D is the third, fourth grade level, and C is the second, third grade level. So everything overlaps. And with homeschooling, you know how it is. You just jump in and tweak. But all the lessons in the primary and junior series have activities called Smaller Steps and Flying Higher that let you tone down or ramp up a writing assignment to challenge a child who's more motivated or to relax the requirements for a child who's struggling a bit.
Wonderful. Well, Kim, look through your notes and what would you like to share some more of your tips? I think we could continue on for a second hour.
Sure, because we've got a couple more minutes, and I have a few things that I can jump
in. I've got
a
couple
on.
More questions, too, but I want you to share the
highlights. Yeah. Break writing into chunks. This is probably one of the easiest fixes that you can do. If you have your child write something, and it's all happening in one day, and he's expected to think about it, brainstorm, write it, and edit it, and maybe even write a final draft all in one day, you have a couple of problems. One is it's just overwhelming, and the second is you don't give him a chance to step away from his writing and lose the emotional connection that can happen if you give him a few days of break between. So if you do the break it up into over time, you can brainstorm on one day, maybe a day or two later, write the rough draft, and then over the weekend let it marinate, and then come back to it on Monday, and then launch into the editing. So breaking things into chunks, spreading writing out over a period of time will be to your child's advantage. Another thing is I've talked about using tools and how some kids just don't have the skills and tools. So again, to avoid those disorganized rabbit trails and repeated ideas and jumbled messes of their writing, finding tools to help them brainstorm or outline or organize are going to be really helpful for you. And then finally, you talked about somebody mentioned in, in the chat room, I think, about a child who doesn't like to have their writing corrected or make it easier for writing, or maybe that
right.
was something that you and I talked about.
Yeah.
Okay, so remember I told you that not to be afraid to act as your child's scribe and to go ahead and let your child dictate to you as one of the number one key things you can do to ease reluctant writer syndrome. The second
right.
tool I'm going to suggest is just as powerful. And that it is so simple, you're all going to go, why did I think of that? Make a photocopy of the original before you begin to mark it up.
Oh, wow.
The child will almost always be more willing to let you mark up a copy knowing that the original has been left intact and that his original thoughts and ideas have not been tampered with on that fresh piece of paper. Sensitive children can feel that their work has been violated when you mark up the original. I don't understand why there's a disconnect, but there is, and using a photocopy is like brilliant. The second thing you can do when you're editing your kids' papers is before you begin to put a drop of red ink on their paper, and I don't even suggest using red ink. I like parents to use different colors or use light pencil marks or whatever, but look for the good before you ever identify an error. Help them identify some hard words they spelled correctly without help, or a sentence that they wrote that has no mechanical errors in it, or identify a really excellent active verb or adjective word choice or really strong noun, so that they realize they need to begin to trust you. Remember I talked about parents' criticism can create a stumbling block for these kids. If they know you're not out to just hammer this paper and look for every mistake, but you're looking for the things they did well and you're praising and blessing their efforts, you're going to get so much more from these kiddos.
Mm-hmm.
Along the same line, don't find every mistake, especially as they're younger. When they're in elementary school age, you're just looking for the few things here and there. Maybe you're just going to highlight one or two things that you really want to focus on for that. As they get further along and they're more confident and more comfortable with editing, you can find more errors. Helping them use a checklist so that it's not just you against the child, but they actually can look at the checklist and know what they were supposed to do and did they fulfill. Are all my sentences complete sentences? Did I check my spelling? Does my writing make sense? Do I have a satisfactory ending to my story? Things like that, that you can just, if you can't think of things to use on your own, find a writing program that includes grading rubrics and editing rubrics, or, sometimes you can find them by searching around online. When we first developed WriteShop, there was no such thing as a decent rubric, and so we came up with some on our own, and now we have them also for our younger level stuff.
Wonderful.
Being consistent in your feedback and being objective and not just basing your feedback on your mood and whether the dog fell through the screen door and the baby's throwing up and it's raining and you're having a bad day, because those things will make you more sensitive and negative and more likely to lash out at your child's paper. Kind of a kick the dog syndrome. Everything's going wrong in your life, so I'm going to make extra red marks on your paper. So if you also have an objective parent rubric or grading or evaluating something like that that's going to help you not be so subjective and basing everything on your mood and your PMSing or whatever is the problem in your day. So
it says vintage moms.
Yeah. Yeah. So and the thing I would close with, the final thing, is that writing is a partnership between you and your child. And your child needs you. Your kids need your instruction. They need your feedback. They need your presence. They need your time. It's not enough just to tell your kids to write. You need to guide them through the steps so they know how. If you need help, then that's when you want to seek out a writing program or some other something that will help you to give this type of guidance. Writing is not intuitively learned by most children. Some will be that way, but most kids need to be taught, and to gain those skills and tools, they need to have their tool belt equipped and stuffed with writing tools that they can use, and that will help them to become less reluctant and more confident in their writing.
Wonderful. And I've got a couple more questions here I want to ask you really quick, but I want to let people know that Kim has an amazing, amazing blog. It is writeshop.com/blog. And I believe you call it In Our Right Minds.
Yes.
Is that right, Kim? Is that the name of your blog?
Yes. Right, and that kind of right.
Yes. A little play on words there. And you will find some amazing tips there. So it's a very active blog with lots of really great information. But, Kim, before we let you go, a couple of quick questions. One is, at what age should a child be at what age should a child be beyond you being their scribe? If a child is a middle schooler, would you be holding them back? Should they be able to get it out on their own?
At that age, it's part of it's going to depend on the child. With Ben, I was letting him dictate. We would brainstorm together, and then I would let him dictate his rough draft to me, and I would write it down, and then he would copy the rough draft. And then from that point on, he worked independently to edit and revise. And he made enough mistakes in his recopying. For instance, one time he was writing a paragraph about explaining the process of how to make a roast beef sandwich. So he dictated it to me, and then when he recopied it, he misspelled sandwich twice. Both times differently, incorrectly, that were correct on my paper. So he still had something there to edit and revise when it was time to do that phase. As he got into eighth grade, I did less of the writing for him. But even when he was in later high school, sometimes the point was for him to think of his ideas, and so he would sit behind me and just talk, and I would type. And then he would take what I typed, because it was just random notes, and then he would have to reconstruct it and do something with it. But we would work together, and some of those were some of the dearest, most precious times that we had together, because like it was his senior year of high school. He was my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have, with my, you know, mostly he was working on his own, and my girls had been independent workers. So that was actually a really rich time for us, because I wasn't doing the writing for him anymore in terms of helping him to construct sentences and all that. He was just spouting ideas. I was writing, typing random notes and thoughts, and then he just thinks it helps him to think. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's a very good. And then the last question here is, how do you set up structure for a nonfiction paper? I'm trying to teach my children to write nonfiction from so her example here is like when they watch a video and she wants them to recap, so it would be like a video for school or something like that.
Oh, well, there are so many different ways to approach nonfiction. If it's a video, of course you want them to take notes during the process. You want them during the video itself to be taking notes. That's not something that I can answer in just a minute or two, and I think we're right up at 10 o'clock. So I don't know how much time we've got, if you want me
to go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Okay. With nonfiction, generally, if you're just having them do a summary, you want them to be able to think about what was said, what was meant, and is there an interpretation that you want your child to come up with? Do you want them to come up with their own opinion? Do you want them to start maybe in the first paragraph to just express what was the overview of the video or the article that they've read? And then do you want them to make note of, you know, what did the author mean by this? What is your opinion? There's just so many ways that you can approach it. Sometimes it helps to have a structured, like to have some kind of a graphic organizer that will help them to mm-hmm. outline and organize their writing. But it also depends on the age of the child. If you're talking about a high schooler or if you're talking about a fifth grader, there'll be right. different ways that you'll have to tackle that.
Very good, very good. And one of the questions here is more applied to me. Is there a way to save this recording so we can listen later? Yes, you can come back to this page at vintagehomeschoolmoms.com. In fact, if you're listening via iTunes or RSS feed and you want to download a copy, you just come back here to this page at vintagehomeschoolmoms.com and look for the post that has Write Shop on there. And so with Kim's little smiley face, so you'll be able to download and listen to this again and stop the recording and take notes, because this was like a workshop, Kim. You are so wonderful to share your information with all of us. And somebody in the chat room, Connie, I believe, wanted to know, you know, said that you give writing prompts and things like that on your Facebook page. So if you're on Facebook, it's facebook.com/writeshop. And Kim also has a newsletter that goes out and lots of really great subscriber information that she sends out. So you won't want to miss any of that.
Thank you, Felice. It's been wonderful.
Yes, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. And I so appreciate you just, you know, with what you're doing with Write Shop as well as your friendship. So thanks again for coming.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'm a publisher, and one day my daughter Christina asked me to write a novel with her. Well, that day was long ago, and that little girl is now an adult. But our novels live on. The Truth Seekers Mystery Series highlights a homeschool family, the Murphy Team, in an action-adventure novel that is sure to entertain as well as teach creation truths. To get your copy, visit our website at TruthSeekersMysterySeries.com.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.